This is Tom Scott with the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, August 12, 2026. We begin today's reading on the front page above the fold. Illinois State Police Investigation. Case closed. Pacey won't face charges. Special prosecutor declined to file charges last year. Paxton. More than a year ago, the decision was made that no criminal charges would be filed against suspended Paxton Buckley Lota teacher and former coach Rob Pacey, the Ford County Chronicle has learned. In response to a Freedom of Information Act request, the Illinois State Police late Friday night released 28 pages of records to the Chronicle regarding their investigation of claims that Pacey inappropriately touched female students. Among them, a 9-sentence letter from Kate Kurtz, a special prosecutor for the Office of the State's Attorney Appellate Prosecutor, to Ford County Circuit Court Judge Matt Fitton, who had appointed Kurtz to review the case, explaining that a determination had been made not to charge Pacey with any crime. I was assigned to conduct a thorough independent review of all investigative reports and accompanying documentation in this case, Kurtz wrote in the letter dated June 11, 2025. A determination has been made that no criminal charges will be filed in this case at this time. The file will be closed in this matter. Kurtz said the decision was strictly limited to the conclusion that a declination of criminal charges is appropriate and proper, noting that no findings regarded the possible evidence of any civil crime claims were made. Indeed, there were civil claims made back then with still more yet to come. 5 days before Kurtz's letter to Fitton, the first in a series of lawsuits was filed in Ford County Circuit Court on behalf of current and former PBL students who claimed they were inappropriately touched by Pacey, and that the school district administrators never notified the Illinois Department of Children and Family Services as required by law and the district's own policies. The lawsuits, now with 6 plaintiffs, name Pacey, the PBL district, PBL Junior High School Principal Josh Didier, and former superintendents Travis Dooley and Cliff McClure as defendants. As the civil case plays out, with the next hearing set for 1:30 p.m. Tuesday, September 1st, Pacey remains on paid administrative leave from his job as a STEM and technology teacher at Clara Peterson Elementary School in Paxton, Superintendent Eric Bohm said Saturday. Pacey has been suspended with pay since the spring of 2025. The investigative files released by state police reference many of the same allegations as in the civil complaints. The files released appear to confirm that a criminal investigation is no longer active, since police would have been permitted by law to withhold the records otherwise. According to the documents, which were heavily redacted and comprise only a portion of the 590 pages of files that state police have said are contained in the case file, an investigation of Pacey began on January 22, 2025, when Paxton police asked state police's Division of Criminal Investigation to look into allegations made against Pacey by a high school student. A report authored by state police special agent Dustin Hoffmeyer, the lead investigator in the case, said he attended Child Advocacy Center interviews of 2 female students who claimed they were inappropriately touched by Pacey, one who was interviewed on January 24, 2025, and claimed that Pacey touched her buttocks, walked into the female locker room, and forced her to change pants in front of him when she was 11 and in 6th grade. And the other, who was interviewed April 15, 2025, and claimed that Pacey rubbed her shoulders and arms while she was 9 and in 4th grade. On April 7, 2025, Hoffman said he interviewed a school counselor who provided a letter from 2013 that documented a student's visit to the counselor to discuss her concerns that Pacey made her feel uncomfortable and was touching her. 2 weeks later, Hoffmeyer interviewed a former PBL teacher who said she saw Pacey coming into her classroom on numerous occasions and giving female students shoulder massages, according to Hoffmeyer's report. The teacher said she reported the incidents to Didier. Hoffmeyer said he met with Dooley on May 7, 2025, and served a search warrant for Pacey's personnel file, which Dooley provided in a binder. In a file labeled confidential, Hoffmeyer said he found information regarding allegations made in fall 2013 that Pacey had touched a student on her hip and slid his hand across her lower back during class and told another student, "I'm not as scary as I seem," as he brushed up against her. Several students, in addition to those two, also said Pacey made them feel uncomfortable. Hoffmeyer said he also reviewed the case file from an earlier investigation by state police from 2019 when they were first asked by the Ford County Sheriff's Office to look into claims that Pacey touched the buttocks and breasts of a female student and walked into the girls' locker room. Pacey, who was re-signed to the elementary school after starting his career in 2008 as a teacher at PBL Junior High School, has denied any wrongdoing, saying in a statement last summer that he is deeply troubled by the claims and without a doubt has done nothing wrong. The former PBL Junior High School cross-country coach continues to serve as an elected Ward 3 alderman on the Paxton City Council. The state police files were obtained via a Freedom of Information Act request that was originally submitted on April 29th and then narrowed in scope on May 13th. The original request sought all files on the Pacey investigation, while the narrowed request sought only those documents outlining its findings. Delays in receiving a response led the Chronicle to submit a request for review with the Illinois Attorney General's Office Public Access Bureau in Springfield on May 29. The records were finally released just hours after the Chronicle published a news story Friday announcing it had hired a Chicago law firm to file a lawsuit against state police for their failure to properly respond to the request. Also on the front page, again with large headlines, 1 year later, naked gunman David Jordan, gone in a flash. It's been 1 year since David Jordan vanished after shooting two cops and burning his home. And he's still missing. D.B. Cooper he isn't, but David D. Jordan, wherever he is, like Cooper, remains a man of mystery. Cooper drew worldwide attention when he hijacked a Northwest Orient airline flight en route to Seattle on the eve of Thanksgiving in 1971, demanded $200,000 and parachutes, and airdropped out of the plane somewhere between Seattle and Reno, Nevada. Some of the cash has reportedly been found in Washington State, but Cooper has never been located. Jordan's case wasn't national news, but remains an area mystery. He has never been found. It's been a little more than a year since Saturday, August 9th, 2025, since police officers came to Jordan's property at 146 West Ash Street in Gibson City in answer to neighbor Kyle Shippert's complaint that he had seen the then 70-year-old man naked in the front yard. From inside the house, Jordan allegedly shot two officers as they came to his door. The officers survived their wounds. Jordan is then believed to have set his house on fire, and Gibson City firefighters were dispatched there about 3 a.m. Fire Chief Bruce Kalal said firefighters had to wait about 20 minutes after arriving on the scene before being cleared to fight the blaze due to security concerns after gunshots had been fired. I would say that's probably what I remember most, somewhat of a feeling of helplessness and not being able to do our job, Kalal said. The officers did their best to control the scene. Kalal said police eventually told firefighters to go ahead and fight the blaze, even though they didn't have the shooter in custody. Firefighters from the Sibley, Elliott, and Melvin Roberts fire departments responded via mutual aid. Jordan's house couldn't be saved. Shippard said the entire episode had begun a little after 2 a.m. when he walked up to his house after receiving a ride to town due to his car having broken down in Mahomet. Shippard said he saw Jordan, sans clothing, standing under a streetlight in Jordan's front yard. Shippard said he yelled at Jordan, resulting in the naked neighbor hiding behind some trees. Shippard said he then called police. Shippard said he never dreamed what craziness would ensue. The fire at Jordan's home also destroyed Shippard's garage and did damage to the attic of his home. Kalal said local firefighters assisted the state fire marshal's office and state police with the search and investigation of the remains of Jordan's house. They found no trace of Jordan's remains, Kalal said. State police took over the investigation, and as a result, Gibson City Police and the Ford County Sheriff's Office said they were unable to comment on the case. There have been few progress reports from the state police, even to city officials. State police took over, and they didn't tell us hardly anything, Mayor Dan Dickey said. They wouldn't say a thing. I even sent them an email saying, hey, would you mind giving us an update? No response. People were nervous, Dickey said. Nobody knew where he was. At first, residents wondered if Jordan could still be in town. Canadian National Railroad tracks run next to Jordan's former house site, and just past that stood a cornfield. Some residents theorized Jordan could have escaped into that field. State Trooper Jamie Bufford said last week that the case is still an open investigation and there are no updates at this time. Gibson City Council member Susie Tongate said she was awakened by calls and texts from friends asking things like, what is going on in your community? As they heard about the shooting and fire last August. I never got the feeling, though, that residents were experiencing extreme dread, she said, after Jordan was not located the day or two after the fire. I think everybody was just more amazed that something so unexpected happened in this small town, and were thankful it wasn't worse than it was, Tongate said. They were thankful the police officers were not more seriously wounded. State police said the two officers shot by Jordan, a Gibson City police officer and a Ford County sheriff's deputy, sustained non-life-threatening injuries. The deputy, a six-year veteran of the sheriff's office, was shot in the left knee and left arm, while the Gibson City officer, who has served for 1 year, was shot in the left hip. Jordan's four siblings, who filed a petition on Monday, August 3rd in Ford County Circuit Court for letters of administration to collect, state that they do not know where their brother is either. Michael E. Jordan of Hoopston, Art Jordan of Thawville, Joyce Flo of Door, Michigan, and Marcia Jordan of Sarasota, Florida, asked in their petition that David Jordan be judged incapable of managing affairs due to his absence and thus be deemed incapacitated. In the court filing, they said they are seeking the finding in order to satisfy a variety of debts that their brother has accumulated since he disappeared, many of which are a result of circumstances of his disappearance. And our last front page story, Angel Warriors, prosecutor considering charges versus ex-treasurer of nonprofit. Group's co-founder reports theft of funds from account. Gibson City. As the Angel Warriors raised funds for veterans, cancer victims, and others in need during 2024 and 2025, the Gibson City-based nonprofit group's treasurer, Kelly Bell, made an estimated $8,000 in unauthorized withdrawals from its bank account, including a down payment for her new Jeep and numerous ATM transactions at alcohol and gambling establishments, authorities were told early this year. Exactly 7 months after Angel Warriors co-founder Scott Sheehan reported the matter to local police, he told the Ford County Chronicle last Wednesday that he wants the 52-year-old Gibson City woman to be arrested and charged in Ford County Circuit Court with felony theft. Sheehan continues to wait, though, as Ford County State's Attorney Andrew Killian continues to review the matter. As of this time, the matter is still under review, Killian said in an email last Wednesday, and no final decision has been made whether charges will be filed. According to police reports provided to the Chronicle by Sheehan, Bell acknowledged making a mistake upon being confronted by Sheehan about the unauthorized transactions last summer. She then paid back $7,525, the amount she calculated was missing, within 2 days. Sheehan, meanwhile, said he believes Bell knew exactly the mistake she was making when she made it, repeatedly over the course of several months. According to police report, Bell's unauthorized transactions on the Angel Warriors bank account allegedly occurred between October 2024 and August 2025 and included $3,427 in ATM withdrawals at bars and restaurants, a $1,000 down payment for her new Jeep, and a $1,020 payment to a man who won that same amount in a 2025 NCAA tournament gambling board overseen by her husband. By his own calculation, Sheehan said the transactions totaled about $8,600. She knowingly got money out of our account, the Angel Warriors account, on purpose, Sheehan said. I could believe her if it was once or twice. I could see that mistake. But no, if you look at the bank statements, it's every weekend for a period of between 6 and 8 months. It happened too many times, too often. Sheehan, a Paxton resident, first reported the alleged theft to Paxton police on January 5th, then reported it to Gibson City police a day later because the Angel Warriors address is in Gibson City, the same address as Bell's residence. Sheehan told police that he received notice the previous June that an Angel Warriors check that was written to Murdoch's in Lauda had bounced as a result of insufficient funds, according to police reports. Sheehan said he then reviewed the group's checking account at the Longview Community Bank in Gibson City, discovering several unauthorized ATM transactions. According to Sheehan, when he confronted Bell about the unauthorized withdrawals, she admitted that she screwed up and mistakenly used the wrong debit card. Bell later told police that Angel Warriors' debit card appeared similar to her own personal debit card, the one she meant to use, and both also shared the same PIN. Gibson police interviewed Bell twice in an 8-day period last February. Bell did not deny any of the suspicious transactions which were found on the Angel Warriors bank statement, wrote a Gibson City police officer in an incident report. Bell agreed with me that the circumstances surrounding this case look suspicious. According to police, Bell admitted that she mistakenly made the $1,000 down payment for her Jeep using the Angel Warriors account, but she said it was not intentional. She added that once she realized her mistake, she deposited the $1,000 back into the Angel Warriors account, according to the police report. Sheehan, however, said that money was not immediately returned. Meanwhile, Bell said the $1,020 prize payout made out of the group's bank account was also a mistake, according to police reports. Bell told police that the Venmo account that she used to send the money to the winner was attached to both her private account and the Angel Warriors account. According to police, Bell said she likely did withdraw cash from the Angel Warriors account for her personal use on a few occasions, and she admitted that the ATM transactions at bars were probably intentional. Bell admitted she did this when she was gambling and drinking, police wrote in their report. Bell advised she no longer gambles anymore. According to police, Bell told them that she never looked at the Angel Warriors bank account statements and deposited money back into the account when she thought she needed to. Bell advised that she was not a good bookkeeper, police wrote. Bell had no immediate comment on the matter when reached via phone on Wednesday. The Angel Warriors group has been inactive ever since Sheehan confronted Bell about the unauthorized transactions last summer. The decision to shut down the organization after just 1 year in existence was not easy, but was necessary given the circumstances, Sheehan said. The 7 or 8 people that were involved in it put a bad taste in their mouth, Sheehan said. It put a black scar on our face. It shamed us, I guess you could say. It's disheartening. It hurts. You thought you were going to do something good. Nothing big, but you were going to do something good. Do what you could, what little part you could to help other people. And somebody who is selfish, inconsiderate, greedy, and a thief ruins it. We lasted a year before they hit the fan, and all of our money was gone, and somebody was lying and stealing from us. Now we'll turn to the obituaries in the Ford County Chronicle for Wednesday, August 12th. Terry J. Belland, Paxton. Terry James Belland, 82, of Paxton, died at 9:10 p.m. Wednesday, August 5th, at the Gilman Healthcare Center, surrounded by his family. Funeral services were held Monday, August 10th at Bayer Family Funeral Services in Paxton, with the Reverend Brian Benz officiating. Burial with military honors followed in Pine Ridge Cemetery in rural Loda. Memorials may be made to the Christian Life Church in Rantoul or to the Paxton American Legion Prairie Post 150. Joyce E. Bennett, Gibson City. Joyce E. Bennett, 82, of Gibson City, died Wednesday, August 5th at the Loft Rehabilitation Center in Normal. Funeral services were held Tuesday, August 11th at the Gibson City United Methodist Church, followed by burial at the Drummer Township Cemetery in Gibson City. Memorial contributions may be made to the Gibson City United Methodist Church, the Alzheimer's Association, or the Aphasia Association. Jane R. Hasselbring, Onarga. Jane R. Hasselbring, 83, of Onarga, died Tuesday, August 4th at Prairie View Lutheran Home in Danforth. A celebration of her life was held Saturday, August 8th at the Shagbark Country Club south of Onarga. A private interment was held at the Onarga Cemetery. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Joe Jackson, Elliott. Joe Jackson, 37, of Elliott, died Saturday, July 25th. Cremation rites were accorded, and a memorial service will be at 2 p.m. Saturday, August 15th at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. William R. Bill Lee, Paxton. William R. Bill Lee, 76, of Urbana, formerly of Paxton, died Saturday, August 8th at Carl Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Visitation will be from 1 to 4 p.m. Sunday, August 16th at the Cox Knapp Funeral Home in Paxton. Memorials may be directed to the Paxton Buckley Loda Education Foundation. Douglas J. Mikesell, Cisna Park. Douglas J. Mikesell, 80, of Cisna Park, died Sunday, August 2nd at Iroquois Memorial Hospital in Watseka. Private services will be held at a later date. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Adrian Moreno, Onarga. Adrian Munoz Moreno, 53, of Onarga, died Monday, August 3rd in Gilman. A funeral mass will be at 10:30 a.m. Saturday, August 15th at the Immaculate Conception Our Lady of Guadalupe Church in Gilman, followed by a 1 p.m. graveside service at the Onarga Cemetery. Aldine E. Munch, and that's spelled M-U-E-N-C-H. Cisna Park. Aldine Emma Munch, 88, of Cisna Park, died Tuesday, August 4th, after complications from surgery. Funeral services were held Monday, August 10th, at St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Woodworth with the Reverend Michael Brulig officiating. Burial followed at the church cemetery. Memorials may be made to St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Woodworth. Jean Olson, Onarga. Jean Olson, 86, of Onarga, died Friday, August 7th at the Gilman Healthcare. Funeral services were held Wednesday, August 12th at the Knapp Redinius Funeral Home in Gilman, with Sissy Poppy officiating. Private burial followed at the Onarga Cemetery. Memorials may be made to an organization of the donor's choice. Ezra Rosenbeck, Rantoul. Ezra John Eldon Rosenbeck, age 3, of Rantoul, died at 8:07 p.m. Friday, August 7th, surrounded by family. A celebration of life will be held at a later date as arrangements are finalized. In lieu of flowers, memorial contributions may be made in his honor to the Cure GM1 Foundation. We return to the news with a story from the Paxton Fire Protection District. 7 agencies respond to a basement fire. No one hurt as fire on Orleans Street prompts response from at least 50 volunteer firemen. An estimated 50 firefighters from 7 fire departments in the area responded Sunday afternoon to a basement fire at a house in Paxton. No injuries were reported, and the house is believed to be salvageable, Paxton Fire Chief Denny Kingren said. Kingren said Paxton firefighters responded around 3:15 p.m. to a report of a basement fire at the two-story home at 404 East Orleans Street. Two occupants were in the home, and they said they heard something, some pounding, or like a small explosion of some sort, and got out, Kingren said. The house filled with smoke pretty fast. The cause was not immediately known, but it was expected to be investigated further by the State Fire Marshal's office Monday morning, Kingren said. In all, at least 50 firefighters responded from the fire departments of Paxton, Buckley, Loda, Elliott, Gibson City, Gifford, and Rantoul, Kingren said. Paxton's department brought about 15 firefighters and 6 fire trucks. While Paxton's department automatically calls Buckley and Loda's departments for mutual aid on every fire call, additional agencies were called to help this time because of the extreme heat, noting that firefighters needed to take frequent breaks. It's difficult to fight a fire on a day like today, Kingren said. They can only be in there fighting the fire for a little bit before they kind of get overcome by the heat, temperature, and everything. Also responding to the scene were paramedics from the Gibson Area Ambulance Service, who were on standby for any medical needs, and volunteers from the Paxton Emergency Response Service, who provided traffic control. And that's all the time we have for this week's reading of the Ford County Chronicle. This is Tom Scott. I look forward to reading with you again very soon.